I do believe that the best experience that you can get, it's not from the success, but from the fails that you get in during the journey. Because in this startup incubator, with those so many products that I saw, it was, I don't know, the success, maybe one product out of 20, 30. And not successful product for me was a learning thing. Like all my kind of experience and the whole like masterclass of how not to do the product, I got from the rest of 29 products that didn't succeed.
Okay, today I am talking with and learning from Ivo Dimitrov. He ran a startup accelerator a few years ago. He's the founder at Finom, which is a European bank based in Berlin. He would have still been in London had we not voted to exclude ourselves from the European banking sector and fintechs more broadly. We dig into how he is driving change and innovation in this business. He's now changed his job title from Chief Product Officer to Chief Venture Officer. What does that mean? We talk about AI and the implications of AI and software development in banking and accountancy. They are developing an AI-first accountancy product, which is currently in beta in Germany. And if you think about doing all of your accountancy just with a chat interface, so you could be doing all of your accountancy just by chatting inside, say, ChatGPT. And also, what do these models mean? In the past, people would have hired machine learning experts and built models. And Ivo doesn't believe that is a sustainable model. He believes that orchestrating the models are how you need to be thinking about taking a product to market and winning. And venture is really about learning fast and failing. He's taking his experience in the software or the startup incubator, and he's bringing that into the bank. And he's saying, look, even if we fail, let's do something risky. Let's push the boundaries and let's see what we can learn. And we've got some interesting cultural, how do Germans and French people deal with T's and C's, which I just think is great. Anyway, fantastic conversation, Ivo. The hour went by like that. I'm sure you'll love it.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for having me, Dominic. It's great to be here. My name is Ivo. I'm a co-founder and a chief venture officer at Finom, previously CPO in the same company for 5 years. And I'm here to share my journey today's day.
Fantastic. So what does Finom do?
So Finom is a neobank and a financial solution for the SMEs and freelancers across the Europe. Like, we're not doing only banking. We also do a lot of all other stuff, such as invoicing, expense management cards, you know, everything what businesses nowadays require. And our goal is basically to kind of to cover the needs of the business and make, like, give them the time and opportunity to focus on their business, not on, to focus on their routine, like, you know, on this, like, not something that they would like to do.
Yeah, and so you're everything but not the accounting?
Not yet. And okay. This is one of the things that I would like to share, that 1 year ago we started this journey, and instead of just doing accounting, we decided to go into AI accounting. And this is how I transformed from the chief product officer to the chief venture officer, this like a crazy role that I have. And the story behind that, you know, like, my goal is to focus on the high risky products, but at the same time, highly rewarded, I would say.
Okay.
And AI accounting, it's something that is in this field, because accounting sucks. Like, it's not something that everyone likes to do, right? It's something that you have to do. It's this is the reality. And usually you have, as a business, as an entrepreneur, you have like two options. The first option, you go to the tax advisor. It's super expensive, not reliable in most cases, because like it's not true that they kind of reliable. And also the most important here, they are reactive, they're not proactive. So I mean, if you ask them a question about like your business situation, work, cash flow, whatever, they would provide you the best kind of possible answer, but you have to know what to ask. They never come back to you like proactively say, hey, Eva, you know, like I know how to optimize your taxes, for example. And on the other hand, we have like a self-submission tools. It's like, just imagine like a forms like that you need like to fill in and then send it. I know you have it in UK. We have it like in Germany. We have it like in many countries. But you have to understand the basic. You have to know what you're doing because otherwise you're going to pay like a lot of, you know, fines like for the tax agencies. Yeah. And that's why we come up with the solution that, okay, this is a perfect like sweet spot for us. And only utilizing AI, how we know it like today, we can create a solution that can proactively do the everything for you, for your business, and let you focus on the business instead of accounting. So it's basically will be the same knowledge with the same kind of like understanding on the accounting and taxes as a tax advisor, but at the same time, much cheaper that it will be with the just self-submission tools.
So you've trained a sort of narrow model around tax.
Yeah, you can say so. So, you know, to be honest, like one of the biggest lesson that we got from this story is that many companies who try to transform into AI field, for example, they either creating like a new AI native or AI first, whatever you call it, product, or you transform the existing company, existing product into AI, they make the same mistake every time. They try to focus on building model instead of focusing on orchestrating models. Because like, you know, we do have like a foundation model such as like Anthropic, from Anthropic, OpenAI, Microsoft, Google, all of those companies. And it's hard to compete with them. And when you're working, and the same story with, it doesn't matter whether it's like AI or not AI, when you're working on the product, when you're working on the startup, for you, the time to deliver, the time to validate your ideas is crucial. And if you focus on the kind of building instead of like orchestrating, you will lose time. You will lose like the moment, the right moment to check. And the most important, that you won't be able to keep up with the current pace of the AI market as we see it. Like every day, new model, every day, new kind of like results, benchmarks. Today's OpenAI on the first kind of like benchmark on the first place. Tomorrow will be, I don't know, like Grok, for example, or Anthropic. Doesn't matter. And this is the reality. That's why the one of the biggest lessons to focus on orchestration instead of building AI. This is like a current reality. Yeah.
So the underlying that those other models are good enough as long as you can orchestrate them properly.
Yeah, I would say yes, and even more. You need to focus on the way, like when you're building a product, like again utilizing AI, you need to kind of think about okay. How I can create like a universal connector and how to make my product work with any models. Because again, this week is one model is better, tomorrow will be something else, right? And for you as a kind of creator, it shouldn't be kind of important which model are behind your product. And this is what I'm trying to emphasize on that, like orchestrating and ability to use any model in any moment. This is the crucial thing.
You haven't launched this AI product yet.
Accounting. We launched the product for the first users as a closed beta, and we are in Germany, and we are kind of trying to get the more feedback and see how it works, and we kind of see the great results because there is definitely a market kind of like a need in this, and also we do see a lot of kind of adoption into AI, because this was the one of the biggest, I would say, risk that we would need to mitigate, that people don't believe, like when you speak with tax advisor, even if you know that they're not good, they're expensive, etc., they're still human, right?
Yes. There's a psychological thing which I see come up in conversations in the last couple of weeks multiple times. You know, like human beings, certainly in the UK, human beings are responsible for about 2,000 road deaths a year. Right. So human beings behind the wheel of a car, they kill each other. Right. But when we put a machine behind the car, even if the machine only kills one person and not 2,000 people, all of the press will be about the machine killing somebody, not about the fact that it saved 1,999 people. There's a different level of, you know, in one of the models recently, Google had done a model looking at replacing radiologists with AI to look at cancer x-rays for lung cancer.
Yeah.
And the radiologists, I think, were 95%. And, you know, Google model was 92, I think. It's a bit better. And it's like, but that wasn't the story. The story was AI fails to spot 8% of cancer. There is always like zero tolerance if you say it's a machine, whereas if it's a human, there's a huge tolerance. And so it doesn't even need to be better. It almost needs to be 100% zero error. You know, so I don't know if you're finding the same thing in terms of your user feedback, but I find that an interesting psychological hurdle that we're going to have to overcome.
Yeah, you're definitely right. And this is one of the, I would say, the challenge that we're facing even now. But we do believe that, first of all, the adoption, overall adoption into AI, it will be much bigger in like tomorrow, not maybe today, but tomorrow. And it's, I would say it's like the same as with, I don't know, television, internet, all these technologies, because even AI accounting as a product, we don't feel and we don't think that this is product today's product. It's a product for tomorrow. And,
yes.
But to get it tomorrow, we need to start now. And the second point here about your comment, that step by step, we figure out that, okay, we can do a few things to kind of to make sure that people won't blame, as you said, like technology, even if it will be making not so much mistake as a human. We decided to put insurance, so we insure all the actions that AI is doing. And
okay.
The second point here that we decided to explain each step. So whenever the AI, for example, categorizes your transactions in order to put it in the right kind of field, right? We provide the kind of, not huge, but still enough explanation and description of the reasoning, why we decided to put it here, what is behind this logic. And if the user doesn't agree with this logic, they can change it immediately from the, like, from the interface. So we still provide the UI to them to change it, but we try to explain our steps. And this explanation even works from the model perspective, because models use those reasoning as a kind of like a decision-making points.
Uh-huh. Well, my accountant, you know, we do an end of year wrap up, and my accountant, we go through it all and we realize he's misclassified loads of stuff. I have no idea why he misclassified it. He never tells me. So, but I have an AI calendar assistant that books things in my diary, and occasionally something odd happens. And so I ping Megan, who runs customer care at Clara Labs. And I say, look, you know, this has happened. And she'll just say, well, that's because you wrote this sentence in the, you know, like, this is how you've trained your bot to react. And so it's just following the thing you told it to do. And it's like, oh, okay. And you forget what you ask for. And then, you know, or something changes. So I think that being able to see the detail of why it makes a decision and be able to change it, I think that's really interesting. And are you trying to display something like Xero in the SME space? Is that your sort of target competitor? Or do all the business tax up to a business of a particular size? Do your VAT returns? Do your corporation tax? You want to do all of that?
It's a good question. And the thing is that before this AI accounting product, we already had the basic of the accounting, of the pre-accounting, we call it sometimes, such as document collection, recognition of the documents. Reconciliation is when you kind of put together transactions and the documents and then match them based on the data there. And then we also had like different connections to different accounting softwares.
Yeah.
And it looks like we had like everything, but we didn't have like a brain, you know, like that put all together and make it as a kind of show it as a product, like to the customers.
So you had something like Dext that did gather all your receipts, gather all your invoices, put it all in one place. Yeah. Categorize it, calculate the VAT, ship it to the accountant product.
Exactly. But the most important thing that we decided to emphasize in our kind of case is, instead of creating a standard UIs with buttons, fields, I don't know, like all this like old stuff. I already call it old stuff.
Okay. A UI.
UI. I mean, like, old way UI, yeah. Decided to go into conversational UI. When we speak about conversational UI, you can imagine the same UI as you see in code or OpenAI, GPT, if you're, like, using the GPT.
I was reading this morning that OpenAI say they're going to release a chat interface for PowerPoint and spreadsheets so that you won't need to open Microsoft PowerPoint or Microsoft Excel. You'll just be able to chat and it will then create the spreadsheet. And then you'll be able to say, I need to do this. So that whole chat interface thing. Well, I mean, I do stuff now in Claude and it, you know, with some MCPs, it goes off and does a thing. And well, actually, I don't even type, I speak. So that is, you know, it's speak to get it to do a thing rather than click to get it to do a thing even.
Exactly. And, you know, like the brilliant idea behind all this conversational AI is that it's not just a chat. It's an enriched chat. So basically, it depends on the case, depends on your request. You're getting different UI elements inside the chat, like, for example, canvas or output of the, I don't know, like image or document or whatever they build there. And this is what I call conversational UI. It's not just like a bubbles with the message from you and from assistant, but like the overall experience. And this is what we decided to go with. And this is what we achieved like at the moment in the product.
There's no UI at all. The only way to drive the product is through conversation.
There is AI because we decided to kind of to have it, but we kind of put it like somewhere behind because the product, it's a high risky product, as I mentioned before, right? And we still kind of in the learning process. And we need to see if we make a mistake. Sometimes people need to go into this like old version of UI, with tables and fields and change something. But this is, we're going to keep it until we figure out that everything is working. Because the whole product is working as a proactive agent, not a reactive. I mean, it's not the same as you go to the ChatGPT and requesting something. You just receive the message proactively from this assistant, say, hey, Eva, you know, like in a few days, it's going to be your VAT decoration. Just check it, check the everything what I did and click the button verify. This is what we require only. We don't require you to put all the data. We don't require you kind of to keep in mind about this like deadlines and all the stuff that you need to do. We're going to do it for you and you just need to verify. That's it.
Fab. That's great. I mean, I pay a human being to do that at the moment. So it looks and feels like that to me, but I pay a human being to do it. It's a few thousand pounds a month. So the fact that you could automate that is what? How have you thought about often in small businesses, you know, they can do the basics, but one of the things we often do is we say to clients, look, you need some sort of strategic CFO, for example, to come into the business, maybe a day a month, or maybe a couple of days a month, because there'll be something that you're not thinking about. There might be, your sort of bookkeeper or your, you know, finance manager is going through doing everything well, but there's a thing you haven't done, or there's something about tax that you haven't thought about, or there's an R&D tax credit that you haven't done, or there's something you could do that you should be thinking about for next year. You know, how are you thinking about overlaying some of that deeper, more sort of strategic thinking in? Is that a thing, or do you still leave that for some sort of human layer?
I would say it's definitely a thing, and even more, AI accounting is just like a first product where we decided to go into this direction. But the Finum, like the whole company, the whole product, the core product, I would call it this way, already started to utilize what we got there and ideas from AI accounting, because AI accounting is, we can call it as an agent, and this is just a one agent in the multi-agent universe. And then what you're speaking about is, we call it AI CFO. You said it like, oh, yeah, exactly. And from AI CFO, you expect not only accounting, you expect to have, as you said, insights about your business, right? Proactive insights. How to optimize the situation, proactive reminders, proactive actions, and vice versa. We expect from this AI CFO ability to do everything what it can do inside the normal interface. And this is what we are also currently exploring and trying to bring to the product, to kind of to the people. And I hope we can share something like in a few months, but not now. Yeah.
Let me interrupt the conversation just for a minute because I don't want you to miss this. My new book, Mind Your Fucking Business, is out on Amazon. If you're thinking yet another business book, I think you're wrong. This is actually a blueprint to cutting through the noise and achieving unparalleled success for you. It's based on 10 years of business coaching, spotting similar problems that people have had and coming up with real world solutions. If it's supercharging sales, if it's mastering talent acquisition, building a powerhouse brand, cultivating a company culture that breeds success, then this book is a ticket to your transformative journey. It's filled with practical tools and frameworks that I use every single day with my clients as part of their coaching program. If you want to take your business from good to great, look, you can go to Amazon and you can buy it, or you can click the link in the show notes and head over to monkhouseandcompany.com. I'll send it to you today. I'll send you a copy for free. I want to help you build a fantastic business. Now, back to the conversation. I'm going to try and tell you why I think your job title makes sense, right? Your new venture, right? See, and then tell me whether, based on this conversation, whether I've worked it out. So you were the chief product officer, right? And you were thinking about, you know, that's a build a product, make it successful. And it sounds the way you talk about this product that it's risky. And if it doesn't succeed, in a way, it doesn't matter because you'll get a return on trial and error. You'll get a return on testing something at the limits of possibility that is different from being a chief product officer where you're trying to be risk averse. You're deliberately being risky with your driving products at the edge of possibility.
I would say not only this, but like overall, I was one of the co-founder before the Phenom. I was one of the co-founder of the startup incubator like many years ago. I mean, those days we didn't call it startup incubator, sorry, because we didn't use this word. we just, because it was like how many, 12 years ago, 10 years ago, but still we had like 3 to 5 products that went through the us. And in total, I don't know, maybe hundreds of the products I saw. And I believe, you know, like this position, the current my position as a venture officer is, it's a great fit for me. And it makes sense because it requires to, from me to have like an understanding of almost every field and everything around the world. Not to be a deep expert in everything, but to have kind of like, I would say, wide visibility on the things. And the second thing here is that I can benefit from the point that I'm one of the co-founders. That's why I can do some risky things, because if it would be like a hired person, in their case, they would be, you know, they would be in position to be in the safe zone because, I mean, people are people, right? So sometimes you want to be in the safe zone, not to be fired because of your bad results. But I do believe that, I mean, this is the reality, right?
You're a co-founder. They can't fire you.
No, come on. Everyone can be fired. But again, the thing is that, like, I do believe that the best experience that you can get, it's not from the success, but from the fails that you get in during the journey. Because again, in this startup incubator, with those so many products that I saw, it was, I don't know, the success, maybe one product for out of 20, 30, successful, I mean. And not successful product for me was a learning thing. For me, like all my kind of experience and the whole like masterclass of how not to do the product, I got from the rest of 29 products that didn't succeed, you know.
What was the most successful product out of the incubator?
It was a model bank. It's those days I lived in Russia, and model bank was and still is, I guess, top three kind of fast growing bank for SMEs, surprise, surprise. So Model Bank started inside this incubator, and then it started to be a little bit something bigger. But since I was like from the beginning of this product, I already knew kind of I learned how to do the banking, and this is one of the experiences that I used when I moved to Europe, and decided kind of to start together with other co-founders to start the Finom. We already knew how to build the bank. It wasn't a challenge for us. We focused on how to get the customers and how to kind of to find the hook for them, but not how to do the technical part.
And you've got that sort of foreign transaction, low fees, and then you've got the sort of consumer piece, which is the get cash back on your business, you know, so, you know, run a business credit card or charge card and get cash back rather than use your personal card in the business. Is that the hook you're using to drive adoption at the bank? Are they the hooks you're using, or are there some others that I hadn't seen that are driving your customer growth?
It's a good question, because, you know, like every year, there's no universe kind of answer, because every year it should be something else. Because at the beginning, it was fast opening a business account. Because let's say 5 to 6 years ago in Europe, to open a business account, especially for the business, I mean, like for the companies, sorry, not freelancers, it took, I don't know, like weeks, 4 weeks, 3 weeks, month sometimes.
Right.
And now it's 15 minutes. It's like a huge difference, right? And this is something, it was one of those like first hooks. Then we went into the cards and we started to treat the business customers the same way as the neobanks treated the consumers. So you provide there to them kind of like a, I wouldn't call it like a super app, but you provide not just a banking and for the rest you go somewhere else, but you provide the whole like universe or ecosystem or whatever you call it, like that people can utilize. And we didn't use it just like, you know, to acquire people, but also to increase the retention, because lifetime, let's say this way, because again, the more you use, the more kind of products or part of the products you use, right? The more lifetime you have. And that's why we can see the success of, let's say, Revolut in the consumer's business, right? Because they are not just a banking anymore. It would be wrong to say they're a bank.
Yes. Has lots of your growth been word of mouth?
In some countries, because again, it's funny though, because like we thought that like Europe is Europe, right? It feels that it's something one, but in reality, Europe is many countries, and every country requires like separate its own approach, and every country is so different, even from the mindset perspective. I would give you just an example. We do have onboarding to open a bank account, right? And during this onboarding, you have one screen. With you know, this like legal like ticks or checkbox that you need to kind of terms and conditions, privacy policy, all this stuff. So in France, we do have all the metrics, right? We see them. And in France, for example, people staying on this page for 7 to 10 seconds. In Germany, 12 to 17 minutes.
They read the shit.
Yes. And this is the difference in the mindset.
Who has life for that? Just click, 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 next. You know,
exactly.
Yeah, no, I'm with the French.
Yeah, this is an example in the kind of a different way, and what is important for the people. And same goes for the pricing. Same goes when we're talking about, I don't know, like trust or privacy. For example, in Germany, privacy is like a top one thing that you have to keep in mind. In some countries, not. In some countries, like, for example, ability to share or even sometimes overshare is more important than the privacy.
Right. When you've been building the accountancy backend or accountancy product, what were some of the things that turned out to be easier than you thought? And what are some of the things that have turned out to be harder than you thought, taking that orchestration approach?
Because of this orchestration approach, I would say it's also like kind of like a lesson that we got. Many companies, as we also thought in the same kind of way, they think about, okay, if I want to start a journey like AI product, AI first product, whatever, we need to hire ML engineers, machine learning engineers, right? And everyone say, okay, machine learning engineers, they're super expensive at the moment, right? And we see the huge competition between them, etc. But in reality, I believe, and this is what I currently kind of like believe, let's say this way, that great Python developer, just a normal Python developer, plus a storyteller is more important and kind of like better if, instead of kind of hiring or trying to find ML engineer. Because when we speak about AI, when we spoke about AI, let's say a few years ago, we spoke about ML, like machine learning, we built models. But now, as I said, we orchestrate models. We're not focusing on the models, we're orchestrating them. And orchestration is the same as a normal development process. Like you have like different APIs, you need to think about how from the algorithm perspective, everything will be kind of work together, etc. And this is a part that like Python developer, Python as an example, can do. And they only need an understanding and knowledge in a few frameworks that currently people are using, such as, I don't know, like a Lang chain, for example, Lang graph, all this stuff. And the storyteller, it's not a position, but it's a role that it might be a product manager, product analyst, I don't know, even developer. But the storyteller is the most important. People sometimes are saying like prompt engineer, but prompt engineer, it sounds too technical for me. And I believe it should be a storyteller because LLMs, AI nowadays, it's just imagine like a baby that knows, that has all the knowledge of the world and can kind of like react on your kind of requests. But you have to know how to, in simple words, explain what you're exactly expecting from this baby. Mm-hmm. Because it's kind of, it's not stupid, it's smart, but it's kind of, it doesn't have understanding of what you mean. It's the kind of, it doesn't feel you.
All the knowledge, but none of the experience.
Exactly. Good words. Great words. Yeah, okay. And that's why storyteller, it's crucial for the product. It's easy to find like inside within the team. It's not, it shouldn't be like somebody that you would hire from outside. And storyteller, it's basically a prompt engineer that thinks about how we explain to the machine what exactly we are trying to get. And it's easy to say than do, but still we see that even the small mistake in the prompt can lead to the big problems.
I found it fascinating building games with my daughters who are 11 and 9. And so instead of playing games, we've been building games with Gemini Pro and Replit and Lovable. And it's just amazing how they can either get it right and they get a game, or when you look at the prompt that they wrote, what they got was the right thing, but it wasn't what they wanted. And so teaching them to be specific or clearer and not get frustrated with the machine when it gives them what it was asked for. You know, the problem isn't the machine. The problem was that you didn't ask for that, you know. And now they're very clear, you know, I want the background to be cats, or I want the background to be Labrador puppies. I needed the writing to be pink. I mean, these things are very important when you're 9 and 11.
Exactly. That's why I'm saying that storytelling, it's a skill that, like, you know, a lot of people are using, but we used before it for different things, but not for the tech, right? In the tech world, we didn't use it too much. But now it's a new thing. It's a new hard skill that you have to have. And when you hire a person, doesn't matter on which position, because you probably saw or heard that many companies are trying to integrate like AI agents for the different departments, domains, I don't know, tribes, whatever they call it. And that's why the crucial skill is not experience working with AI, but experience to explain yourself, like what exactly you want to get. Explain the situation, explain the outcome, and explain the way how you see it.
And that whole, from a customer's perspective and an outcome perspective, so that when somebody then uses the tool, it works in a way that makes sense. How much of your code is written by humans and how much of your code is written by AI?
I would love to say that like a big percentage, be was created by AI, but it's not, unfortunately.
Okay. No, like I only wondered because, again, you know, you have, you know, a number of people in charge of big companies going, oh yeah, like 80% of our code, or just, you know, and then you sort of scratch and you talk to real people and it still tends to be quite a small proportion.
I would say, you know, the biggest problem that when you start a new journey, it's easy to use like a bootstrapping tool such as Lovable, I don't know, like Figma Make or something like this. So when you can or maybe even like a Cursor to create a prototype or like first version. But when you have for 5 years already like a legacy, let's say this way, this is the first. And the second, it's a bank, and bank equals trust. So
yeah,
even small mistakes, like any mistake with the money, not our money, but money of our customers, that's it. So yes, that's why we can't just, you know, like just, okay, let's do it with AI. There are some limitations in our case.
Okay. What's the sense of the economy in Germany and Berlin and the startup scene? Is it a good place to build a business? Is it a good place to be a founder?
I'll say yes, definitely. And somehow I lived for a while in London, and then before the Brexit, and then I moved to Germany, Berlin, and now then Brexit happened. And I would say that London is still kind of like a capital of the startups, of the fintech, definitely, etc.
Yeah.
But because of the Brexit as a reason or trigger or driver, Berlin became kind of more startup oriented. And now it's kind of like inside the Europe is the capital of the startup scene, I would say.
Would you still be in London if it hadn't been for Brexit?
I would probably, yes.
Yeah, and the business would be based there rather than in Berlin. Mm-hmm.
Most likely, yep. Yeah.
Okay. No. I didn't vote for Brexit. Some 51% of the rest of the country did. But let's not go over that insanity again. Fab. When you think back to some of the startup incubator, do you think if you'd had AI then, like now, you know, what are some of the things that would have been different or easier?
AI, first of all, AI is about efficiency, right? So if you're speaking about from the company perspective, not from the consumer perspective,
yeah,
AI equals efficiency. So we would definitely be able to optimize a lot of process, and maybe instead of like hiring a lot of people, like having like AI agents and be efficient. More efficient than we were. The second is we would be able to validate, as I said previously, when you work, like when you kind of start a founder, the most important thing to you is to validate your idea, to get the traction, to get the product market fit as fast as possible. Whenever, like, whatever you want to do, you just need to get it like fast. Because every day, every time, every minute that you spend on validating idea, you're burning money that kind of not giving you anything back. And again, we would be able to kind of create those prototypes or bootstrap product, like a version of the products using AI and validate ideas. But yeah, now you can do it. And the third point here, everyone is saying, I don't know if you heard about this, like a vertical agents, vertical AI. This is something that people are speaking about now. And a lot of people are trying to compare vertical AI or vertical agents with a SaaS, a software as a service, right? As we kind of get used. I believe the vertical AI is something important and still will rise maybe next months or year, because it's basically the same as a SaaS, but it's a kind of software that based like a built in on AI, but also specify in the specific kind of like industry or specific solving specific problem, like for example in legal tech, in health tech or somewhere else. You know, vertical AI, again, if you're coming back to the possibly having AI during the startup incubator. we would be able to utilize it and maybe go faster again because of those kind of multi-agent systems and all the stuff that we have now. MCPs. MCPs is like, it's the best thing that was invented, I guess. Like,
it's just incredible.
And at the same time, from technology perspective, it's nothing. It's like, it's just a protocol, right? It's like a description of the rules, how we work. That's it.
But it's just that ability to connect things and then have the agents do things. It's just fab. It's like, feels as though instead of going, oh, look, isn't that exciting or isn't that interesting to, oh, it now does a thing. And now I can now, you know, build agents, build workflows, automate things, schedule things. And it's not automation. It is actually agentic, which is then different from automation. I was just thinking, I know you've only just in beta with some customers in Germany, but you know, what's next? You must be thinking, like, this is, if this works, what are you going to do next? What are some of the other venture products that are on the sort of in your fizzing around in your brain that you're thinking you might solve problems to solve? Or maybe it's not product. Maybe it's what problems do you think SMEs have that you could solve inside your Phenom sort of wrapper?
I would say, first of all, is the way how we kind of, again, depends on how AI will grow, because there are a lot of kind of conversations about when we will have AGI, for example. We would be like next year, we would be like in 2 years, we would be tomorrow. And depends on this, like AGI ready to use, a lot of things will change immediately. As soon as we have understanding that it's there, like just around the corner, I would say the whole market will change because even we just spoke about MCPs, right? And MCPs is how you should look at this. All the current like foundation model creators, OpenAI, Google, etc., they will utilize it, and their goal today is to acquire as much people as possible. Because when people starting to use, let's say, GPT as example, right? And then for the applications such as Phenom, for example, Phenom is a bank, right? It won't make sense anymore to kind of to work on our own AI in the future, but somehow integrate into these like platforms, because they will become a platform, right? And we probably utilize something like MCP or maybe MCP, we'll see. And then the question would be, okay, let's imagine that you start your day from next year, we'll start from GPT and then speak GPT. So you won't open any other app or website or whatever. Uh-huh. You're just in one platform. We should integrate into this platform? How we should make sure that using this platform, you would use Phenom, not Revolut, Conta, or other kind of players? And I guess this would be the next challenge that we need to face, need to think about, and then eventually face. How are we going to compete between the platforms? Agent platforms or multi-agent platforms.
Fab.
I don't know if it does make sense. Yeah, but
no, yeah. It does. I think I'm just thinking about a client that we spent some time with this week that is building a platform. And you know, from your perspective, you'd say, no, don't build a platform. Just make sure you integrate with everybody else's platform and do orchestration, because that way, because you can't beat ChatGPT or Google or Microsoft. You're not going to win a platform battle. But if you can be interoperable, then you're not ruling out a big chunk of the market.
It will be basically the same as happened with App Store. I mean, inside the Google Store, App Store, right?
Yeah.
You're either there or nowhere. That's it.
Yeah. And you can technically, you know, sideload things in, but most people don't bother because it's just too hard.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. And then Amazon had their own version of the App Store and they just gave it up because they can't compete. So they stopped.
No surprise. But also here, what I wanted to comment on this topic, that the second thing is the way how you, let's say, user experience, because this is also like we see the transformation from the classic UI into conversational UI. We see the a huge, I would say even revolution in voice AI. Because, like, I don't know if you try to speak with, like, all those, like, voice assistants. Like, it does matter.
I mean, it used to be crap, but what, and we're running rapidly running out of time, but I just, my kids were practicing French and learning their times tables. And so, you know, fire up ChatGPT in voice mode and say, okay, I need you to test my daughter on her times tables. You know, let's not do 5, let's not do 10, let's not do 2. They're easy. But the others, and randomly, and praise her when she gets it well, when she gets it, you know, gets it right. And then we can do half an hour times table testing with ChatGPT, or, you know, test my daughter on her French homework, right? Then, you know, you take a picture of the French homework and you say, okay, create a test and talk to her. So she, and it's like, you know, it, you're creating something in the moment that didn't exist, you know, just amazing.
It feels like it has emotion, because like current versions of all this kind of like, let's say GPT, it can do any accent that you want to. It can, yeah. Even when it speaks, it's like it has, it pauses. It like, you know, speed up sometimes. It kind of laughing in the right moment. It's like, it doesn't feel odd. It feels right. I don't know.
Yes. Yeah. So all these things, and they're just going to get better. They're just going to get better, and video's getting better. It's just, you know, it feels, I feel as though in the last 3 months, there's been more progress than, say, when ChatGPT launched to March this year. You know, like it just feels as though there are, every week, there's a significant, not necessarily change in the underlying model, but things that make the models extensible and more useful, like MCP and, you know, other connectors and stuff. Ivo, it's been an absolute delight talking to you today. Thank you very much for joining us from Berlin. And where can people get a hold of you if they want to find you? Where's the best place to get you?
So you can find me in LinkedIn. You can find me in Twitter. You can find me in Instagram even. I'm pretty public. But yeah, thank you for having me here again. And yeah, it was nice to talk with you about all these things.
Brilliant. Thank you very much indeed.